Hello, and welcome to The Nature Connection, Science, Wildlife, and Environment Radio, with your hosts, Lisa and Nancy.
In commemoration of Save the Redwoods League's 100th anniversary, Heyday is proud to present a book that showcases both the grandeur of the redwood ecosystems that sustain California and the deep love they have engendered in scientists, writers, artists, and the general public. It's a beautiful book.
It is.
It's a great organization, Save the Redwood Leagues. Also, the book is called The Once and Future Forest, California's Iconic Redwoods. It's available now, today. Go to heydaybooks.com or savetheredwoods.org. And when you're there, there's a whole travel section you can click into as well. So you can go redwood forest hopping. I like it. And picnicking and walking. I like it. We're so excited to have Sam Hodder join us. He's the president and CEO of Save the Redwoods League. And he's joining us here on Big Blend Radio today to share some of the history of Save the Redwoods League and also to talk about this beautiful book. And he wrote the introduction to it as well. So Sam, welcome. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, we're doing good.
Good.
Very excited. So Save the Redwoods League. League's 100th anniversary, I'll get that tongue-in-cheek there, right? It's the 100th anniversary, the centennial, and to me that is so exciting to talk about because we think about conservation, you know, and this organization is the only one that's solely dedicated to conserving the redwood, right? And have been doing it for 100 years.
That's right. That's right. Wow. So we were founded here in San Francisco in 1918, to protect and restore the redwood forest and connect people to their peace and beauty. And it has been a whirlwind of 100 years, let me tell you. So just a little bit of context for your listeners about the redwood forests. People know a lot about the fact that they're really old. Some redwood trees can grow to be over 2,600 years old. It's the oldest coast redwood and the oldest giant sequoia, a redwood cousin and also part of our conservation mission. The oldest giant sequoia is 3,200 years old.
Wow.
And that's extraordinary. That's back when the legend of the Trojan War was said to have taken place. It was already a healthy tree when the Trojan War theoretically was said to have broken out. So the trees themselves are really old, but the forest is just mind-bogglingly old. There are fossil records of coast redwoods that go back over 200 million years.
And
the forest that's growing now here in California that has been reduced after ice ages and climate change and that has been growing here in California for over 20 million years. And yet, despite that extraordinary resilience, despite standing the test of time, once gold was discovered in 1849, within just a few generations, we lost 95% of that ancient redwood forest.
Yeah. Oh my God.
The trees came down to build the cities of San Francisco and Berkeley and Los Angeles in a California that was growing at exponential rates. By the time the league was founded in 1918, almost half of the redwood forest had already been cut down, and our founders were determined to find a way to save as much as they could of this extraordinary ancient forest, and began buying forest land. And the result is that we've protected over 214,000 acres. We've helped to create more than 66 redwood parks from the Oregon border all the way down to Big Sur. And then in the western slopes of the southern Sierra Nevada mountains in the giant sequoia range, and helped to create a network of parks that attracts more than 30 million visitors from around the world every year.
Wow, that's amazing. So a lot of people who want to see the giant trees and feel that ancient history, because there's something really magical. And you feel, you know, it's like when you go through a park that's, you know, ancient in regards to geology, you know, you get that vibe of like, you know, these rocks know everything. And I feel that way about walking in a forest of redwoods or, you know, whether it's a sequoia or a coastal redwood, there's this it's like the forest knows. And I know you have stories like that in your new book, The Once and Future Forest. There's this just this magical quality, you know. Muir Woods, I remember when we went there, and everybody, it's if you're going to go to the Bay Area or Marin County, definitely Muir Woods is awesome. But I didn't realize until going through your website just how many other redwood parks and preserves we missed out on. Yeah. But going through there, it really feels ancient. And I remember seeing those big banana slugs and the flowers, and you feel like you're in Jurassic Park in there. But there's just something, I don't know, there's something very restorative for ourselves. I know they talk about forest bathing. But I believe it from going there. And that story, that is one of those amazing conservation stories, Muir Woods.
Oh, it is indeed. It is indeed. And it was actually acquired by Congressman Kent back before Save the Redwoods League was even founded. He went on to be one of our counselors in our early years. He gifted it to the federal government as a national monument, and named it in honor of his good friend John Muir. So it was really one of the catalyzing events to the broader conservation movement, and that was of course picked up by Save the Redwoods League. Iconic redwood landscape that was so characteristic of the American spirit was then just spread around the country as our membership grew within the first year when we were founded in 1918 by thousands all around the country, because there was something so charismatic, so so capturing of the imagination about the effort to save these forests. It really was the first nationally engaging conservation effort that then kicked into motion land conservation as we know it, because of course 1918 was, there was no land trust movement, there was no environmentalism.
Oh wow.
So this was really creating the movement out of whole cloth, using that the inspiration and iconic nature of the redwood forest to galvanize enthusiasm and support. And the book, you know, as we celebrate our 100th anniversary and look back on the legacy of that conservation story, helps to illustrate that 100 years is just the beginning. That the conservation opportunity that's reflected in the redwoods is every bit as relevant and urgent today as it was 100 years ago, when the old growth trees were being felled at such a rapid rate. And now we look at these islands of old growth that we've successfully protected in parks up and down the California coast, that are, these islands are surrounded by a sea of industrially managed commercial redwood forest. There's still over 1 million acres of redwood forest in California that is unprotected. It's not old growth anymore. It's all kind of recovering young forest, because the redwoods just sprout right up from their stumps. And many cases, it's second growth, third growth, even fourth and fifth growth. But there is this 1 million acre sea of redwood forest that is trying to grow back. And as we think about the conservation challenge of today, as we think about how we build resilience into our ecosystems, how we capture carbon out of the atmosphere, and we realize that old growth redwood forests sequester more carbon per acre than any other forest in the world, and yet we have this 1 million acres of forest that is still in this commercial cycle, we realize that we can find a better balance, that we have a conservation opportunity for the next 100 years that's about restoring resiliency in California's landscape. So the book is a collection of essays that that dive into the multidimensional elements of the redwood forest landscape, from certainly the history of our organization. It is our centennial book, after all. But there's an essay that dives into the science of redwoods, the complexity of the ecosystem and the canopy of these trees, and the work that's been done to understand this, you know, fundamentally superlative forest landscape. There's an essay about the cultural history and the many Native American tribes that have been living among the redwood forest for thousands and thousands of years, and drawing out the cultural significance of those communities that still live, manage, steward in the redwood forest of California.
There's so much on the cultural side, and then there's also, when you talk about the carbon, and so we talk about the importance of, look what's happening in regards to climate change or global warming, whatever anybody wants to call it. When you look at something like when you have the redwoods and what they're doing, there's this ecosystem and the web of life. We always talk about that on the show, the web of life. And I learned that term when we were in the Sequoia National Park with Dana Dirks. They talk about this, like if you take out, especially this clear cutting that, has happened, when you take out a species that is iconic, I look at the redwood as like an apex species of plants. It's like the importance of a wolf, right? And how wolf conservation helps coyotes and their life cycle. So when I look at taking out a redwood, it's going to affect an entire ecosystem of plants, animals, salamanders, elk, this whole, wouldn't that be right if in regards to it being one of those key species?
Absolutely. And certainly because many of those key species need to live in those big trees. And the north-south orientation of the redwood forest is a critical corridor for those species. But also because, quite fundamentally, they clean our air. They clean our water. They cool our water. And that feeds then directly into the salmon habitat that is so fundamental to the coastal river systems of California. And a healthy salmon habitat feeds directly into healthy communities on the coast, healthy human communities, be they the Yurok people on the Klamath River or the commercial fishing that is such a recreational draw for tourism. So the health of our rivers and salmon, the health of our bird species are all dependent on the choices we make in our redwood forest.
Mm-hmm. It just seems to me, we kind of as a society, well, we're going to build this, we're going to tear down that. And there doesn't seem to be a concern about our air quality ever. What's going to happen if we just keep tearing down all trees? That at some point, and I think we're already there, it's really going to hurt us. And I think we're aware of it, but because we seem to build project by project, there's no huge body that says, no, you can't turn no more trees. You can't cut them down anymore because we need them for our air. Do you know what I mean?
I do. And I was at the Global Climate Summit here in San Francisco last week. And a big part of the message was to try and turn the focus of the people that are thinking about solutions for global climate challenges to protecting and restoring our forests. Mm. There is so much good talk about clean energy, about reducing our dependence on fossil fuels, about electric vehicles. There needs to be more acknowledgement about the fact that protecting and restoring our natural places, our forests in particular, is 30% of the solution for our climate challenge, and yet only gets 2% of our investment.
Oh, wow.
So there really is an incredible opportunity. And if you and in this book, you'll get the sense that our position is really one about seeing a glimmer of hope in the redwood forest, because it is so fundamentally restorable, and if we make the right choices and investments, we can bring this forest back and have it be part of the solution. And when so much of the conversation is about things that are beyond our control, about the damming of the world's waterways, the receding glaciers, the extraordinary loss of species biodiversity, we have in the redwoods something that we can do. We can actually heal this forest, and in our lifetimes, and then within a couple of generations, begin to see the old growth structure and character that we've lost, and restore all of those values and benefits that are going to be so critical to our resilience moving forward.
And it's something, like you're saying, this is something that we can do. And I think it's always exciting to have that. People want to feel like, hey, we can make a change and a positive change instead of getting angry and yelling at people on social media. Though that can be fun for some. But anyway, no, there's this part of it, too, in regards to the timber industry, because you don't really see that going away. So how do you, you know, with the league now, how do you feel about the timber industry? Because, you know, there's a balance. I mean, we're still using wood, you know, in houses and in different things. And wood is a renewable source, right? So isn't there a balance of allowing some of that to happen or not?
Oh, absolutely. There is an absolute balance. And again, most of our message is about what we're protecting, not so much about what we're protecting the forest from, but what we're protecting it for. Mm-hmm. And the industrial timber landowners in the redwood forest and the smaller family landowners, many of whom are dependent on their working lands for their own livelihoods, are a critical part of the solution. And there are many landowners with whom we're working where their stewardship of the land really is the best match for that given property, where we are acquiring conservation easements rather than the land in fee to become a park, that just prevents the land from being subdivided and developed, but allows for continued sustainable forest management. And it really is about identifying those strategic places on the landscape where we can say, okay, for this watershed, for this area that's buffering this protected old growth grove, it needs size and scale to survive for the long term. This is a landscape where we would propose a restoration vision that would grow the old growth of the future over the next coming decades, where we'd really look to restore the landscape and then let it be added to the reserve. And then other parts of that million acres of redwood forest that's still unprotected, where, you know, sustainable forest management, if they shift to selective forest management rather than clear cutting, if they lengthen their rotations so that the trees aren't getting cut down quite so young, that could be a great part of the solution, where we restore both some ecological values in a working forest and continue to have a local wood source to provide for the needs of there are 35 to 38 million people living in California. We build things. We don't want to push those bad practices of forest management into other parts of the world necessarily, if we can generate some of that wood supply in a good way, in a healthy and ecologically functional way here in California. So it is, you said it exactly right. It's about balance. And our science is telling us that we can find a better balance.
I agree with that. And I think what's interesting is these pieces of land that you're saving, and I know your background is in that. and I love all the organizations that save pieces of land,
exactly,
because I think we need that. Let's talk about the communities around these pieces of land. Isn't there that importance of balance too, and connectivity between the community, the people, whether it's a visiting community or locals, understanding their redwoods, that outreach of understanding, you know, how lucky they have these giants in their backyard, but also to go there, recreate, be among the giants, take a walk, take a picnic, you know, that kind of thing. And then maybe have build up a little bit of a tourism economy around them, but I'm talking responsible tourism economy. So isn't there that balance of people going to these places, getting to see them, understand them, helping protect them that way, but also this could be, you know, a resourceful business.
Yeah, absolutely. And they the communities that live in and around the redwood forests are critical ingredients to the long-term solution as well. And rightfully so, they would claim that that's a two-way street. There's a lot of promise for these gateway communities to benefit from the tourism and the economic boost from the existence of these parks. And yet many of these parks have the same infrastructure that we put in back in the Depression when the parks were established to begin with. There's a real opportunity for the broader community to reinvest in our parks, to recognize how critical they are to our state's economies. And I'm saying parks in general, not just redwood parks, although that certainly is the area where we're focusing. The parks are such a critical engine for local economies, whether it be because people come and stay at hotels, they're buying their gas, they're buying their equipment, they're buying their fishing licenses, they're buying their outdoor gear. There is a huge outdoor economy that is really sustained by these public parks. And if we don't invest in the visitor amenities of those parks, if we assume that the baby boomer audience that was the beneficiary of the original design, that people still use their parks the same way, then we're making a huge mistake. We're going to miss a whole generation of potential advocates, of potential ambassadors, and of the economic engine that the parks represent. So a real focus needs to be, and this is part of our vision as well, is to reimagine the parks themselves and bring a new era of investment to make sure that the parks are relevant and inspiring and safe for a new generation of visitors.
I think this is so important when you talk about that new generation and re-looking at what the importance of parks and how they're utilized. And I think the community part is key. I, as we've traveled on our Love Your Parks tour and just even locally here in Tucson again and going to community parks, like we're lucky within 5 minutes we're in Saguaro National Park. And there's our iconic, you know, cactus species of Arizona and of America, you know. And it's amazing to me because you're on the outside of a city. You just, boom, you're in this park. And I think there's an interesting thing of how the boundaries and the borders of the park meet a community, but it's almost like the community now is protecting the park in a way. It's almost like that's how it should be, you know, but the importance also of being able to have this accessibility within minutes from your home to be able to be in nature. And I think there's something really important where maybe it's that's where you're going to jog. Maybe that's where you're going to take your walk. But it's important for people to have fast access to these places at times when it becomes part of your daily life in a way.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I think here in the Bay Area, even in the depths of the Depression, the people of the Bay Area voted to tax themselves to buy land around the Bay. So as you look around the Oakland Hills, the Berkeley Hills, then the Marin Headlands and the peninsula going south, there is this greenbelt of protected land that we are the beneficiaries of today. And that is one of the primary, in my humble opinion, economic drivers for what makes the community in the Bay Area so vibrant, why people want to live here. It's because of the extraordinary green space and that you can get to a park within 10 minutes of your door. And that is, we can never take that for granted. There's a redwood park, for example, right in the city of Oakland, Joaquin Miller, that Save the Redwoods League bought back in the 1930s and gifted to the city of Oakland. It is, it's a second growth redwood forest. There used to be the tallest trees in the world growing there in the Oakland Hills. But even as a second growth, you know, there are children from the city of Oakland that walk through this park and see a tree that is the direct clone of the trees that the old growth trees that were cut down 150 years.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Oh. Yeah. You know, there's that one. And you're in this, it's in the sequoias And it's actually National Forest, now that I think of it. It's like, there's that one where, you know, you could see where people were cutting it down. And at one point, they were taking, like, the slice of a tree around the world. I mean, they're showing people the magnitude of these trees, mm-hmm. actual pieces. Like, and it was, and eventually people started to think, oh, maybe we shouldn't cut these down. I mean, the Sequoia National Park, I remember the story of they used to cut down the trees to put the cabins, and then they realized, no, we need to put the cabins near the trees because that's what people want, you know, and then it's like, save the tree, you know. It's interesting. And when you think about these hundreds of years of, you know, conservation, that's when, you know, it's your centennial, but you know, people were working on this before it actually became an actual group. You know, everyone was doing things. There's a story, Guardians of the Giants, in the book, 100 Years of Save the Redwoods League, and it's by Gary Ferguson. And it just, to me, these stories are inspiring, especially for the younger generation to go, you know, they were going around in that old car or on horseback to get to these places. And look what we have now. We, you know, we have so many
I'm
tools
back.
Compared. Yeah, you're here. We have so many tools. I know he disappeared there for a second. I just kept talking, but, you know, I'm good at that. Talking about these historic stories of guardians, and talking about the one in the book by Gary Ferguson, Guardians of the Giants, how when you look at, number one, you look at all the logging that has happened in the past, but looking at some of these historic photos, the ladies, the League's Ladies Committee with their cars, Save the Redwoods, they were putting signs on their cars. And I don't know if that's a Model T or what kind of car that is, but that's cool. And you see just these historic images of then and now, like Galen Clark, you know, mm-hmm. he was like the keeper of Yosemite. Don't you think he was like the security guard of Yosemite and Wawona? He was. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that, those little vignettes of history, and admittedly, I'm in it every day. So a lot of the stories of the League's founding and of the early conservation, are pretty familiar to me, but, I mean, Gary's essays in particular brought some element to that history that I didn't even know, that was new to many of the longtime League members who have been with us for 50 or 60 years. The stories of the Women's Federation and Save the Redwoods League, the Women Save the Redwoods League of Humboldt County, and the work that they did to help inspire the founding of our organization, how they collected 2,000 signatures from the elementary school students in Eureka, California, and sent them to Teddy Roosevelt, asking him to establish a park in the Redwood Forest because we were losing the old growth and their community depended on these spectacular forests. It was a remarkable story to think about. You know, these were the wives, the daughters, the sisters of the men who were working in the mills. And they came together to bring their community around a different vision, a balanced vision, to say we need to save some of these trees before they're all gone.
Yeah,
absolutely. Mm-hmm. I love this book. This is a treasure. And, you know, not just for Californians, anybody who's been to the Redwoods, anybody who loves forests would love this. If you've never seen a redwood, you need this, and you need to go to a redwood,
and
you need
also,
to go hang out with a tree.
Yeah, but it's also good to find out there's so many parks where you can go, because you kind of think, okay, Muir Woods and Sequoia and Kings Canyon National Park, and that's about it.
Or the Redwood National
Park. The forest.
Yeah.
But, you know, until we started talking, I didn't realize that there were so many more parks where you can go and see redwoods. So you don't know. Have to go to the same park at the same time. You could go during the week. You don't have to go in summer. You could go to a different park.
I know. You could just do a whole California vacation just on the redwoods. You know what, Sam? Nancy's very happy because sometimes people come on our show and we talk about trees and we talk about tree medicine and how we are human beings share some DNA with trees. And so sometimes it gets a little woo-woo. And so we've had people, conservationists, you know, like Lucas Nelson, he was on our show, Willie Nelson's son with his band, The Promise of the Real, and they recorded one of their latest albums in San Francisco. And so she said, you have to do the tree exercise. So we do this to people. And Nancy started reading the book. And everyone, again, the Once and Future Forest, California's iconic redwoods, out today. Go get it. But you have a tree medicine.
You've got the tree exercise in the book. I feel totally vindicated now.
Yes, you made her feel very good.
Because I've been telling people, you got to get on your hands and knees next to a tree, and you got to put your right palm on the tree trunk, and you got to close your eyes, and you got to stay there and listen till you can hear the heartbeat of the tree. And people think I'm nuts, but I tell you, you've got it in your book. So I know it's true. I'm not the only one.
Yes.
But it's important. Who are we to argue with that this whole population of people that have found this sense of personal connection of almost spiritual power in the redwood forest?
Exactly.
It has happened across generations, all the way back to the cultural significance to American Indian tribes that have been living in and among the redwoods. These are powerful, powerful places. And the book is designed to really explore that at all levels, a fundamentally scientific level, an historic level, but also a very personal level. I mean, David Harris's story gets down to that very intimate spiritual connection between an individual person and an individual tree. It's just beautifully, beautifully done. And Save the Redwoods League, of course, is a science-based organization. But at the heart of it, what has inspired engagement in our vision is about the way these forests make us feel. And they bring a sense of peace and perspective and balance that really can only come from a forest that's withstood the ages, that has been here for millions of years, that is why these places are so special. And we have a lot to learn from these forests, and there's a lot that we're still learning. And the layer of science that's teaching us that they're actually a critical tool in the fight against climate change, even as they are such a source of inspiration and peace, that it just provides all the more fodder for the urgency of our restoration vision.
This is amazing.
True. I mean, we need that air.
I know. And everybody, you've got to go to Gold Bluff Beach in Oreck.
I know
we talked about this before you came on the show with us, and it's one of those magical places. And apparently, we need to go see what is it? The fern
growth? Canyon.
Fern Canyon.
Yes.
Okay.
We missed a lot.
Yes.
It's all part of that Prairie Creek State Park that's within Redwood National and State Parks. This is a collection of five state and national parks that contain 45% of the remaining old growth redwoods in the world. And it's where Save the Redwoods League has been working, doing our land conservation work for 100 years, saving these special places so that the rest of us can go and enjoy them. And that complex around Prairie Creek and Fern Canyon and Gold Bluff Beach is absolutely extraordinary.
Oh, man. Can we start our tour early? I want to go. I want
to
get in the car right now and come up and see you guys and go hang out in the redwoods. What is the, for listeners, number one, get the book because that helps you, right? It helps the league, right? Save the Redwoods
indeed.
League. Okay. So everyone, that's the first step we can do. The Once and Future Forest, California's iconic redwoods. Go to heydaybooks.com or savetheredwoods.org. All those great places you can buy books. But it's the holiday season coming up, and this is a beautiful book. We've got the advanced part, but I believe that this is just absolutely beautiful with the cover. Can you tell everybody about that part? Like, it's a beautiful cloth-bound cover. And
it really is kind of a special work of art, this book. Mm-hmm. And it's got the cloth cover. It's in a special protective case. There are photographs and paintings and artwork and visuals that help to tell the story and are kind of embedded in these essays that give these thoughtful perspectives that really draw you in to the significance and the beauty
of the redwood forest and the historic legacy of our collective efforts to protect them.
Mm, and best read under a redwood tree in a forest.
Sure.
Okay, so, you know, we're excited. There's so much to talk about. I do want to get into, you know, talk about the role of fire in trees. We learned of those lessons in the sequoias between the forest and the Park Service teaching us about the importance of fire. We do want to talk about all of that. And there's so much with all these destinations. So we want you back for our Redwood Report every quarter. Here on Big Blend Radio, so we can talk about the trees and what we can do to save them. But before you go, I have two questions. One, other than purchasing the book, what is something that our listeners can do right now to help the redwoods and to help the bleed?
Well, I think most importantly, I'd encourage people to go out to the redwood parks and reestablish a connection with this iconic landscape. But I would also encourage people to visit our website, recognize that as our centennial year, we're embarking on our second century of conservation leadership, and we need help and support. We would welcome folks to go to the website, learn more about our conservation vision, and explore more about some of the projects that we're working on to protect and restore the redwood forest and connect people to them.
This is exciting. This is very exciting. Go, Nancy.
Oh, I was going to say the website is?
Oh, you savetheredwoods.org, everyone. Savetheredwoods.org. Okay, so we have to ask you this question. It's one of our favorite things. We started a Facebook group called 1 Hour Walks. Everyone go to 1hourwalk.com. Type it out. No numbers. And what we do as part of our learning from our parks tour is that people used to think that, or people still do, there's a lot who think that if you're going to a national park, you need to be an athlete, or you need to be, you know, a backcountry hiker, you need to be fit, you know, you need to be an Olympian. and what we found is a lot of parks, like we were talking about Muir Woods, you can just take a nice, easy stroll. You can have kids in a stroller. If you're in a wheelchair, there are ways to get around into a parks and take a nice, easy 1 hour walk. And I wanted to ask you if you could take a 1 hour walk in any redwood forest or preserve with anyone alive, passed on, you know, just so you could have that 1 hour walk to have a nice conversation with somebody, learn from them. Who would it be and where would it be? And what are you going to talk about? Because we like gossip, especially in a forest.
Oh, wow. That is a remarkable question. First of all, asking me my favorite redwood walk is like asking me which are my favorite kids, because they are all so unique and so special. I will say that there is a property that we've acquired out on the Sonoma coast. It's a 700 acre old growth forest that we're going to be turning into a public park under our ownership. And this is kind of a hidden gem, hidden in plain sight, right near Stewart's Point on the California coast. So I'd put that one out there as a lovely walk that I would love to take with my grandmother. My grandmother raised her kids on the coast of Maine, and at one point packed her three daughters into a station wagon and drove them across the country, visiting with four women, visiting national parks and camping as they went, and ended up in the redwood forests of California.
Wow, that's so cool.
And you have to assume that her love of the outdoors and her commitment to taking her three daughters as a single mom to the parks of this country got through to me.
Yeah.
And put me in this business.
I love it. Well, you're in an awesome business. Yeah. I think it's the world of trees. You can't get any better than that. Thank you so much for joining us. This has been such an amazing pleasure. Such a beautiful book. We're so glad to learn more about the league, and everyone again, savetheredwoods.org. You can go to heydaybooks.com, and the book title again is The Once and Future Forest, California's Iconic Redwoods. Such a pleasure having you, and we want to thank our sponsor for today's episode. It's nature photographer Margaret Carrera. She's very dedicated to parks and nature. And you can shop online at her store, carrerafineart.com. She has fine art, nature, and garden photography-inspired gifts for the home, office, and even wearables, so you can wrap yourself in nature.
That's
so
nice.
Again, it's carrerafineart.com. And don't forget, Big Blend Radio airs Sunday through Friday. You can go to bigblendradio.com for our schedule. You can listen as shows go live or anytime later on demand in all kinds of places, from iTunes to TuneIn, Spreaker to YouTube, Stitcher, Spotify, iHeartRadio. It's all there. And we're going to close with a song. So we have a special song for you, Sam. This
Bring
is
it.
Called Loving the Land. It's by Wally Lauder. He loves nature. He's here in Tucson, Arizona, but people can go to his website and get his albums. It's wallylauder.com. And here it is, Loving the Land. Take care, everyone. Thanks, Sam.
Thank you.
Well, I'm sitting on my back porch, my guitar in my hands, and I'm looking at the afternoon, I'm looking at the land. It's got that honey-colored light, golden rose reflecting from the sun. She steps outside and asks me, what are you doing, hon? And I'm loving the land, I'm just loving the land, I'm loving the land, I'm just loving the land. Got an angel in my corner, must have a Buddha at my side. And if I had any worries, I've left them all behind. Maybe it's the time of day, maybe it's the light. Blame it on the air I'm breathing, but I couldn't feel more right. And I'm loving the land, I'm just loving the land, I'm loving the land, I'm just loving the land. Afternoon light on a simple corner lot in a humble town, waiting for the sun to go down, down. Well, when this land was made, it was made from near and far. Molecules and galaxies and mystery and bits of stars. And I'm just letting go like a leaf to the wind. I'm floating on a feeling, I'm just giving in. And I'm loving the land, I'm just loving the land, I'm loving the land, I'm just loving the land. This land is your land, my land, from California to New York to the Fiji Islands. Just loving the land.